Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:35, and that is Pacific Summer Time, and that is on May 18th. And today the real big story was in the currency markets, where the dollar was resurgent. So against the euro, it was stronger by almost a full cent. The yen, almost a full yen, but then it was weaker against the pound. And part of the reason for that is because speculation that the UK is going to leave the EU has really ebbed over the last week. So, and realistically, despite the fact that there are both cogent and emotional arguments for both staying and leaving, it probably comes down to the same argument for why would the Scots vote for independence when there is uncertainty about the potential outcome and no clear well-defined benefit for exit, and then perhaps the UK electorate is coming to the same conclusion. Therefore, the pound, which had sold off aggressively at the beginning of the year, is looking oversold if one is really considering that the UK is unlikely to leave the EU, and therefore it is breaking up out of a three-month range against the dollar. And then because the euro is susceptible to additional weakness against the US dollar, then if you look at the euro pound cross, then you really get an idea of just how much the pound had pulled back against its largest trading partner currency, which is the euro, and then how much it has it could potentially rally if it's going to unwind that decline. And today's action really was a very clear upward dynamic in favor of the pound. But it wasn't just a bullish pound story. It's a bullish dollar story, generally speaking, because there are so many countries have negative interest rates, at least, or negative yields on their bonds, or interest rates that are at historically low levels. Even Australia, which has one of the largest positive carries in the world, that carry isn't likely to get wider, but rather narrower, rather than what we're seeing in the USA, which is the 12-month yield bouncing from the 50 basis point area. And if you were to take the numbers off the charts and the labels off the charts and simply look at it, what you're presented with is a base formation that has broken out on the upside, and then this rivetingly consistent progression of higher reaction lows, where reactions find support in the region of the trend mean, and that is exactly what we've just seen happen again. Now, there have been bouts of increased volatility, where you've had speculation that the Fed is going to raise rates and then is not going to raise rates and then is going to raise rates and not going to raise rates. So what happened today to sort of move the needle again? And it is really rather simple. The Obama administration has changed the rules and the ceilings at which salaried workers can be denied overtime. And they've raised it to $47,000, which makes an additional 4 million people eligible for overtime. And of course, that also starts, and this is a very simple argument. You've already had a number of large conurbations or cities increasing the minimum wage to $15. And it isn't so much about the number of people that are earning the minimum wage. It's about the people that were previously earning $15, where somebody flipping burgers can get $15. What about the person who is semi-skilled? Are they going to be happy earning the same thing as a pimply-faced teenager? So they're going to want to get a higher salary for whatever it is that they do, and that creates wage demand inflation. And if you're automatically moving an increasingly large number of people, 4 million people is a significant number, into a wage bracket where they can demand a pay bump for working longer hours, well then the people that were previously earning the the wage that they're going to be now getting will obviously want something more. So there is a knock-on effect. That's the real lesson here, or the real point to take home, and that is why the Fed pays particular attention to wage growth. And there is this very tight correlation between the Fed funds rate and wage growth. Wage growth had been falling precipitously during the credit crisis, and so did the Fed funds rate. And the Fed funds rate went absolutely nowhere as long as wages were going nowhere. Wages broke out in September, October, and the Fed raised rates in December. So they're going to be keeping a very close eye on what's happening to wages, what's happening out there in the real economy, where you have low employment, where you have moderate economic growth, but you're starting to see wage demands. And the rise of populist politicians like Trump and Sanders is a reflection of the fact that there are large numbers of particularly millennial people, so generally speaking people younger than 35 years old, really feel like that they're getting a raw deal from this economy, and that they are not earning enough money to pay for the standard of living to which they believe they're entitled. So then there are big things happening out there in the economy, and betting that the Fed isn't going to raise rates if they see wage inflation is probably something that people will come to rue further down the line. Now, because we've had this liquidity-fueled rally on stock markets where investors have really been borrowing at remarkably low rates and borrowing prodigious amounts of money and then investing in higher yielding or in assets that have got potential for asset price inflation, then that has helped to drive the stock market higher, and particularly corporations, which have been able to borrow at historically low rates. They've been able to rejink their balance sheets. They've reduced their weighted average cost of capital. They've been able to increase their dividend payouts and buy back their shares, and that has been the primary conduit for which that has allowed liquidity to flow into the stock market. But if interest rates are rising, then that entire conduit starts to unravel. And well, against that background, then today stocks were unchanged, having rallied almost 1% in early trading. They gave up almost the entire amount, and the S&P was in almost completely unchanged on yesterday. The same with the Dow Jones, and the Nasdaq was, I think, just up a tiny amount. So this is still a risky kind of environment, and I think Goldman Sachs today was saying that globally they think that it's also a risky environment. So then when you start seeing big name banks saying that this is a risk off kind of environment beginning to unfold, you do have to start taking some notice of that. We're at the upper side of a 12-month range, and it's looking increasingly likely that we are not going to break up to the upside on this occasion. And then that obviously opens up the potential that we could go back down and test the lower side of the range. And 1800 to 2100 is on the S&P 500 is a fairly substantial range. Then when we look at the bond markets, the long bond had a fairly substantial move in here today. The short bond had a fairly substantial move. Equities have been less volatile today, but there is absolutely no guarantee that that is going to be the case tomorrow. Then in the commodity markets, when you have this dollar rally and the potential that interest rates are going to rise, well, obviously then the dollar has been strong. So when you look at dollar denominated current commodities, they were weaker in here today. And the gold price was I'm just going to get the exact figure. It's closing out the day at $1,257. It's down almost just over $19. And silver was down 38 cents. Now, gold got up to $1,300, which was a new recovery high, and failed to sustain that. So, and it's just a rule of thumb from the chart seminar that a failed upside break, particularly when the failure the dynamic of the failure is greater than the dynamic of the breakout, which is certainly the case right now, then the potential for prices to go right back down and test the lower side of the range are greatly increased. And the lower side of the range is in the region of the moving average, which is pretty close to $1,200. And I'm posting a report today which lays out a coherent, incredibly bullish argument for gold. And but unfortunately, there is absolutely no evidence in the price action to support it. And that really is something that we have to take on board, that it's very possible to make both bullish and bearish arguments about a whole range of assets. And yet we have to marry those so that they gel with what's actually happening with the price action. Because what's happening in the prices is reality, and what's happening in reports is conjecture and subject to subjectivity. And what we're seeing right now in gold is that we're still in this just consolidation of the big breakout from this medium-term downtrend that was evident previously. So this is still a corrective phase, really, for gold. And if the recovery is going to be given the benefit of the doubt, it will absolutely have to hold the $1,200 area. Now, gold shares have been a high beta play on gold. And if gold goes right down to test the lower side of its range, which is an increasing possibility, then the potential for some consolidation of what has been just a stellar breakout by the gold share sector is looking increasingly likely. And considering that the Amex Gold Bugs Index has rallied over 100% since January, then it has plenty of room in which to consolidate and still look bullish over the medium term. But it is looking increasingly likely that that is what it's going to do, that we are going to get some consolidation. So this is perhaps not the time to be racing to buy what might be a bargain, if you look at what might be easy to consider a bargain, if you were looking at just the last weeks of trading, but rather just to bide one's time and wait for some evidence that support has been found, because we are likely to get a better buying opportunity in the precious metal markets. And not least because while the Fed might be thinking about raising rates, nobody else is. So then gold represents a very attractive store of value for other currencies, and particularly the euro and the yen. With euro weakness in here today, obviously the price of gold hasn't been impacted to nearly the same extent, and the South African rand has encountered resistance in the region of its trend mean, and it looks like it is going to get weaker from here. The Canadian dollar broke through $1.30 in here today, so that also looks like it's going to be getting weaker. And then you got to look around, and there are not that many currencies look like they are in very strong positions right now against the dollar. And not least because the dollar had pulled back so abruptly over the first quarter of this year. And when you just take a big step back and look at the environment that we're presented with, we've had a spectacular rally since the middle of January, and it is rolling over. So we're back in this kind of environment that we saw in 2011, which is risk on, risk off. We've been through the risk on, and it's looking increasingly likely that we're going into the risk off. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and wish all the best to all of you.